Hi, and welcome to the PodMag. I'm Karen Foley, and Dave is poorly. Yep, after a whole year of wishing I had another co-presenter, I'm actually missing him. Anyway, welcome to our show, and a big warm welcome to our new listeners. The PodMag is our audio news programme about the social sciences and our student connections projects. You can get in touch with us by email at podmag@open.ac.uk or follow us on Twitter at PodMag. And of course, visit the website, which is connections.kmi.open.ac.uk. So, since I'm on my own doing this today, I've put a notice up in the hub to ask people for interviews. But I very much doubt anyone will come. So I've compiled a list of all my favourite songs and I thought we could play them. But I'm going to do some news first. In fact, there's lots of news this week. And then top of the list, we'll have Lynn Anderson with I Never Promised You a Rose Garden. Oh. Oh, hi. It's Jonquil Lowe.
Oh, Jonquil, come in. I'm really glad you came.
Thank you. Yeah, I saw your note up in the hub and that's so much more interesting than the meeting I'm supposed to be in.
Oh, brilliant. Oh, well, I'm glad you came. Hey, what's all this paper and maths?
Oh, it's the autumn statement tomorrow. So the Chancellor's going to make all these tax and benefit changes. And I'm doing some interviews on the radio for the OU about it. But of course, at the moment, I've no idea what the Chancellor's going to say.
Gosh, have you got any clue at all? Or is it like you've got so much stuff here? I guess you've got to be prepared for anything, don't you? Because they don't leak anything, do they?
Well, actually, they kind of do. You've got to remember this autumn statement is coming just a few months before a general election. And the government's been making announcements all this week. Well, it started at the weekend. So they're trying to kind of get good news out there because really the autumn statement's got quite a problem because the government is still borrowing too much. There's more austerity after the election. You know, there's another 5% of GDP that needs to be cut according to the Conservative government and its policies. So it's all a bit grim. So they're trying to put out lots of good news at the moment. So we've had lots of announcements about road schemes, more money for the NHS, flood defences, I think, is on the on the menu today for today's announcements. Yeah. But yeah, the autumn statement itself, it's really hard to see what he's going to... I'm sure he's going to have some small sweeteners there because, you know, it is run up to an election. Yeah. But he hasn't really got much money to play with.
Mm, so it'd be interesting to see what happens. How do they then sort of ask you as an academic to contribute to all of this? What's the main sort of things that you're adding, I guess, to all this debate? Mm.
Well, I'm a lecturer specifically in personal finance. So I'm in the economics department, but my angle is very much how these announcements affect ordinary people, real households. So as the announcements come out, I think, well, what does that mean for, say, a first-time buyer? What does this mean for a family that's, you know, perhaps flies away on holiday? You know, because we've got little rumours around and people have been lobbying for changes. So one of them is the abolition of air passenger duty for children under 12, you know, which for families making a holiday, that would save, well, about £13 per child for a European holiday, a lot more, around about £80 per child for going to the US. So it's kind of taking the big measures and trying to make them relevant to ordinary people and their household.
And I guess that then, like you say, coming up to the election, that really affects how ordinary people are going to vote then.
Well, it does. Obviously, the kind of sitting government in this kind of position has got a huge advantage because here is not just an opportunity to make announcements about tax and kind of standard government policy, but it definitely is an opportunity for electioneering as well. So the government's going to be quite careful to try and make the kind of announcements that will win it votes and to try and avoid the bad news that might lose it votes.
And so where do you see them sort of trying to tap into in terms of reaching certain groups of people?
A lot of the cuts so far have hit the benefits going to working families, and the government has ring-fenced pensioner households, basically. And I suspect they will carry on doing that until after the election. But I think after the election, you know, they're going to have to look at pensioners as well, because pensioners are starting to look quite well off compared with, you know, some working families who are struggling on pretty low incomes. You know, we've seen... wages go up since 2010 by about 4%, but prices have gone up by 12%. People are struggling.
So you're really looking, I guess, like you say, at that £13, at that what that actually means then for the average person, and then how that budget is going to affect them individually.
Yeah, that's right. And I think some of the changes we see are going to be very, very small. You know, for example, the government's had a lot of consultations out, and one of them has been about very small benefits you get through work. So, like, you know, if you do a good piece of work and your employer gives you a bottle of wine as a thank you, technically you'd need to declare that and pay tax on it. But it costs the revenue about £6.50, I think, to process that claim. So they're saying, OK, maybe there should be a limit. So maybe benefits up to £100, say, would just be tax-free. But I think that's all we're going to see is these very little kind of tinkering changes, because there just isn't money in the kitty.
So feel good measures and trying to spread it out as much as they can to encourage voting.
Well, I think so. I mean, it's interesting. The government asked this year, they asked the public to come up with ideas for what should be in the autumn statement. And so we did a Friday thinker where we said to our students, well, what would you like to see in the budget? Well, in the autumn statement. And there were obviously lots of great suggestions, but one theme that came up again and again was students were saying that there should be a living wage. You know, it's not sensible for people to be in low-paying jobs and claiming in-work benefits. It's just a subsidy that allows employers to pay less. And I have enormous sympathy with that, but, you know, the government's not going to tackle it, unfortunately, because there are all these other problems that if someone is on benefits and they move into work, you can't just cut off their benefits in a sort of cliff edge manoeuvre, because very often that means they're worse off in work. You know, you would have to have a very high minimum wage for someone to be able to transfer straight from benefits into work and be better off. So some kind of in-work benefits are probably always going to continue. But our students are absolutely right. You know, it is a subsidy to employers. And, you know, in a civilised economy, you would expect people in work to earn enough to live on, wouldn't you?
No, interesting. No, well, thanks so much for coming in. And it sounds like you're going to have a very exciting week. And it'll be interesting to look back and see what's in there and how that all goes down. But thanks for coming in, and all the best with all those interviews, Jonquil.
That's great. OK, Karen, have a nice day.
Thank you. See you soon. Bye.
Bye.
Ah, well, that was great seeing Jonquil. She has got a hard job to do. Anyway, I very much doubt anyone will turn up today. So let's have some news. Right, and in the news this week, we've heard that Professor Tim Blackman, who is our Pro Vice-Chancellor of Research, Scholarship and Quality, will be taking over as Acting Vice-Chancellor following Martin Bean's departure in early December. And then, at the Times Education Awards on the 28th of November, the Open Science Laboratory won the award for Outstanding ICT Initiative of the Year. And they've been doing loads of exciting stuff, basically developing an online platform so that science students can do remote observations and actually use simulated real-life equipment via the internet. So brilliant stuff there, and obviously great for distance learning. And also, we have some international news. Andreas Vossler from our psychology department has been giving a keynote talk in Austria at an event to celebrate 40 years of the government's family-funded counselling services. Now, he's going to come along on the PodMag for an interview very shortly and talk to us about some of his research. Then, of course, we've been following University Challenge, and it's with much sadness that we said goodbye to our team on the 24th of November. They did a sterling job, and everyone was so proud of you. So thank you very much for some great entertainment there. And this week, if you check out the faculty Facebook page, you'll see that we're having a Christmas jumper theme. So don't forget to take a photo of your favourite Christmas jumper and share it with everybody on the faculty Facebook pages, and look at everyone else's too. Ah, well, while I was reading the news, we've had another guest who's come to join us. It's Ruth Tudor. Now, you are the president of the Open University Students Association. That sounds like a massive job. What does that involve?
You're right, Karen. It is a massive job. Basically, I am the the top person when it comes to USA. So the buck stops with me. But I do it with the support of an officer team. You know, I don't do it by myself.
Because we know, like, the Open University Students Association do lots and lots of things. And basically, they're sort of like a network, I guess, for students to meet and do a lot of things to support students in their studies with the Open University. And I guess the side you're more involved with is the governance and decision-making side of that organisation, isn't it?
Yes, there is a lot of that. I do attend a lot of meetings that are to do with governance, but equally, I am just as involved in engaging with students and speaking to students and getting the students' views, because we have to take these student views to the governance meetings and make sure, I'm there to make sure that the student voice is heard at these governance meetings. So it's important to me to know what the student is thinking and feeling and just get that across to the university as best I can.
So you're effectively representing the whole voice of students at all of these meetings. Now, that must be a challenge. How do you do that? How do you hear these student voices? How can students sort of make their voice heard if they want to say something?
Well, really, it's just very important. I mean, we have a Facebook page, so students can get in touch through Facebook. We have a Twitter account, so students can also get in touch via that as well. We have representation on many committees. There's also student consultative forums, so we listen to students through that as well. And then there's all the use of forums that we have in the virtual learning environment. That's another way for us to hear the student voice. So there are lots of ways for us to engage with students. And we obviously have our own student magazine and Freshers Fortnight and things like that as well. So lots of different ways.
Now, you were involved in our first ever Student Connections conference last year. And obviously this PodMag is really tapping into a lot of the work that we're doing around that whole project. Can you tell us what you got out of that individually by being involved in doing a presentation there?
Well, I suppose it was something I had never considered doing before, and I would never have thought to do it. And it was just a simple click on a link, as usual, as so many things are with the Open University. I obviously got to meet people. I got to know people that I had never had contact with before. And over the internet, I sat down and put together a presentation with a student I never met. So it was all done sort of virtually.
And what would you say to students who may be thinking about getting involved? Because you came to those Activate sessions. Like you say, you met people, you worked together who you'd never met in the flesh. What would you say other people can get out of doing something like this?
I think, well, obviously there's meeting people that you would probably never otherwise meet. And it was a good ideas. The idea sessions were quite good as well, and it made you think about different things. And the idea that we eventually went with was something that, you know, we would never have thought of had it not been for that Activate session. So it was good to sort of hear other people's ideas and just get to meet people, basically, who were of similar mind.
Yeah. And USA have an exciting project coming up soon, don't they? The USA Radio. Can you tell us a bit about that?
Yes, certainly. We ran an USA Radio show in our Freshers Fortnight back at just before October, and it was so successful that we thought we would try it again pre-Christmas. So this is a sort of Christmas event, so obviously the main goal is the sort of the festive feel to it. But beyond that, I know that definitely I'm supposed to be being interviewed for it. But beyond that, it's just a case of getting students listening to it and getting that student voice out there and making students aware that we're there.
Brilliant. What I liked about the last show was that students were phoning in and you were really getting a sense that this was all live and happening at that time. So, yeah. Well, all the best for that. And of course, this is going out and the radio show is on the 10th of December. So if you miss it, you can watch it on the catch up, which is all on the USA website. But Ruth, thank you so much for coming along and all the best. And I hear you're doing VC interviews at the minute.
Well, yes, we were involved last week in the VC selection panel for the candidates that are going to be interviewed tomorrow. So, yes, I've already met them.
Brilliant. Oh, that's very exciting. Well, we look forward to hearing more about that in due course. Well, thanks for coming in, Ruth, and all the best, and we'll see you soon.
Thank you.
I don't think we're going to get through any of the music I've planned today. Oh, but look, it's Liz McFall, the head of department from Sociology. Oh, I'll try and grab her for an interview. Now, Liz, you've been doing some really interesting work on markets. Can you tell us, firstly, how you got interested in this whole area?
Okay, I suppose when I started doing PhD research back in the 1990s, I came out of a background in which I had been teaching marketing and further education, and I had been working as a contract researcher. And I was also working as an Open University tutor. And what struck me, because in both those places, marketing and more specifically advertising were talked about. In further education, when I was teaching would-be marketing students how to do marketing, the emphasis was all on failure and how it's very difficult to build a market. In the social sciences, I discovered that the emphasis on markets is always on success. What marketing, and particularly advertising, do to us to make us want things that we don't need, to seduce us into spending more than we need for products that are expensive, and expensive in all sorts of different ways that cost the earth. You know, we overconsume too many products. What puzzled me was how both things could be true. So what I decided to do in my PhD research was to look at advertising, not on the basis of the adverts themselves, but on what was going on at the business end. Who was producing them? How were they producing them? And what did they think they were doing?
And now you're applying this to work looking at insurances, aren't you? And in particular at the minute, the whole issue of Obamacare and how people are sort of perceiving that in very different ways, particularly in the States compared to here, how we sort of perceive this idea of healthcare and provision and to what extent the implications then are in terms of our personal freedom. Can you tell us a bit about that?
Yeah, well, it's a bit of a leap. You know, when I started reading about marketing and markets and market making in the 1990s, all the social sciences were interested in luxury and brand products. And I started to get really interested in, well, what about the other things that get sold? What about the really dull and mundane products that get sold? And gradually, through twists and turns, I started doing historical research into marketing and the origins of what most sociologists would call consumer society. And what I discovered was there wasn't really an early history of brands that was similar to what was being talked about in the 1990s. What seemed to dominate early advertising in the 19th century was advertising for financial services, advertising for railway investment, advertising for insurance policies. And I started to think about, well, that's a form of commercial promotion that sociologists almost never talk about. So I started to wonder, well, how did this idea take off? How was it that people's hearts and minds were changed to the extent that by the 20th century, they were signing up in their millions for life insurance policies? Even people, and especially people who have very little money to spare. More recently, that has migrated into work looking at the biggest change in health insurance in the United States, which is popularly known as Obamacare. Under Obamacare, you have an attempt to persuade a population who are historically very suspicious of the state, very suspicious of state provision, to sign up to a form of social insurance, which they think of as being like welfare, like European welfare. But instead of welcoming that, many people in the United States are deeply suspicious of European welfare type health provision. They regard it as being something that would interfere with their freedom and their choices as individuals. So how Obamacare is sold to that public seemed to me to be a logical extension of this interest. It's worth bearing in mind that personal bankruptcies caused by medical bills are the most common form of personal bankruptcies. Sooner or later, people will get ill. And in the United States, there is no means of provision to cover those medical expenses for a huge section of the population. These are not the poorest of people, nor are they people who were covered by their employers. They were people sort of in the low middle. Maybe 10 million more of those people are insured now and have coverage, so that if they fall ill, they will not also become bankrupt. And this seems to me a huge public policy challenge and a huge challenge in terms of understanding society and how societies change.
Brilliant. Oh, well, thanks so much for coming along and talking to me today, Liz. That's been really, really informative. We'll hope to see you soon.
Thank you.
Well, despite not having got through any music at all today, I think you'll agree we've had a fantastic lineup of interviews. So thank you very much to everyone for coming along. Let's now end with some dates for our diary. Don't forget, we've got USA Radio on the 10th of December. The Activate sessions are this evening, that's if you're listening on Monday the 8th, or on Monday the 15th of December, always from 8 till 9 o'clock at night. And again, OU Live, you can access that from the website. Look forward to our next PodMag, which is going to be on the 22nd of December, and of course the conference, which is the 22nd to the 24th of March next year. So I hope that's in your diary. We'll also be updating the website with more news, in particular our roadshows, which are going to be coming soon. So don't forget to keep in touch with us there, connections.kmi.open.ac.uk. Well, it's been a great show. I hope you've enjoyed it, and look forward to seeing you on the next one. Bye for now.
The Podmas!